Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, April 10th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, City hears details from Vision Zero Task Force. Plan aims to eliminate traffic injuries, fatalities by 2050. By Ben Schaffer, staff writer. With a goal of eliminating deaths and serious injuries on Midland roadways, the Midland City Council voted to adopt the Vision Zero policy and heard details on the project during its meeting Tuesday. The Vision Zero Safety Action Plan, a collaborative effort between the city and county, aims to achieve its mission by 2050. Vision Zero Task Force member Michelle Hageman said the task force organized the action plan into 8 major safety emphasis areas, most often associated with fatal and severe injury crashes. Roadway and lane departures, speed-related, intersection-related, distracted driving, impaired driving, unrestrained persons, vulnerable road users, and post-crash care, emergency response. These 8 safety emphases are based on the Texas Department of Transportation's Strategic Highway Safety Plan. Hageman noted that a motorist being hospitalized or transported from an accident by ambulance constitutes a serious injury. City documents emphasize designing streets and transportation systems that prioritize the safe movement of motorists, pedestrians, and cyclists. The city also aims to reduce vehicle speeds. From 2018 to 2022, 87 people died in traffic incidents within city limits. Hageman presented Midland's road network and crash history, identifying the city's high injury network, to pinpoint roadways with the highest accident rates and studying additional corridors. The task force examined 5 corridors: Fairgrounds Road, Wadley Avenue, Andrews Highway, La Mesa Road, and 3 roads near Wall Street and Midkiff Road. Additionally, Midland has initiated a 12-corridor program focusing on the city's most traveled roadways to address everything from litter abatement to traffic safety. Our goal was to study various contexts in the city, areas needing safety improvements, to identify specific projects and prepare for future grant applications, Hageman said. Identified safety countermeasures include improving signal visibility at pedestrian crosswalks, enhancing street lighting, and managing motorists' turning movements. Adopting the Vision Zero plan is the initial step in applying for the TxDOT's Safe Streets for All grant, with the city aiming to apply by the May 16th deadline. The grant could fund up to $10 million in projects. We're not looking to fund all $35 million needed for our streets solely through local taxpayer dollars. We're exploring other funding opportunities, Mayor Lori Blong said. The task force plans to present a final action plan to the City Council by the end of April. This article is entitled, Analysts Unsurprised at Oil's Muted Reaction to Iran-Israel Conflict, by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. Oil markets took Iran's attack on Israel this weekend in stride, with West Texas Intermediate losing only 25 cents Monday. But the markets continue to closely watch future events. It looks like the oil market is shrugging off the threat of a wider war in the wake of Iran's big attack on Israel, Ed Herz, UH Energy Fellow at the University of Houston, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Herz added, "If the Israelis respond with attacks on Iran's military bases, there should not be much of an impact on oil markets. But if Israel targets Iran's oil infrastructure, we will see prices jump over $100 a barrel quickly." Bruce Bullock, Jane and Pat Bolin, endowed executive director at the McGuire Energy Institute, Southern Methodist University Cox School of Business, agreed Monday's market had little risk premium. "When something like this happens, any bump in prices tends to be short-lived," he told the Reporter-Telegram by email. "The market has confidence that the Saudis and the U.S. shale producers could put more oil on the market if a conflict such as this were to take oil off the market. But," he added, "we will see as events continue to unfold." Analysts at Rystad Energy said everything hinges on what happens next. They told the Reporter-Telegram by email that oil prices declined Monday in large part because Iran's retaliation was well signposted and expected. So the market had already priced that retaliation in. Now that it has happened and the outcome was muted, the geopolitical risk to the market is fading somewhat, they wrote. "As the risk to supply is waning and a military response from Israel looks less likely as more time passes, prices are holding steady," wrote Rystad Senior Vice President Jorge Leon. "Tensions are high, and either party's next moves are hard to predict. But all the significant signs point toward an easing of hostilities and restraint in the short term. One thing is for certain. Volatility is here to stay." All eyes are still on the Middle East, as further escalation cannot be ruled out, something that would rapidly increase the geopolitical risk premium in the oil market, he wrote. "Still, we believe that the most likely scenario now is for all sides to show restraint in the coming days and weeks for a few reasons. Even though Israel's military chief has just announced that the nation would respond to the weekend strike. If there is one surety," he continued, "it is geopolitics will play an even bigger role in the oil market in the coming days and weeks. As such, expect significant volatility in the near future." This article is entitled "Classic Honda on the Move." New $25 million dealership on west side of Loop 250 south of Thomason Drive. By Mella McEwen, oil editor. Classic Honda of Midland is on the move, and, like the Pied Piper of folklore, expects new businesses to follow. The great thing about auto dealerships is not only do they bring tax revenue, they also drive big traffic, said Joey Gabarda, owner-operator of the dealership. "Usually, when you place a dealership, other businesses will follow." Gabarda is constructing a new $25 million dealership on a 7-acre tract on the west side of Loop 250 south of Thomason Drive. Dirt work is ongoing and expected to take some time as trenches for new gas, electric, water, and sewer lines are constructed. He said he expects the dealership to be in its new home in about 15 months. The dealership is currently at 3705 West Wall Street, and Gabarda explained he is making the move in large part because there are apparently no plans to redevelop that stretch of Wall Street, Business 20. "It didn't make sense for me to redevelop this at that price," he said. Two, he said he wanted to put that investment into an area where he could help foster development. The new location, which will be near the new Legacy High School, is part of the last piece of Loop 250 to be developed, he said. Where HEB and surrounding businesses sit will be the heart of the Permian Basin, he predicted. While the dealership will be about the same size, Gabarda expects sales revenue and employee count will double or triple in the new location. Once we're done, it will hold 563 cars, almost double our current location, he said. The design is Honda's new Blue Stage design, and Gabarda said his will be one of the first Honda dealerships to utilize the design. It will feature a two-story, energy-efficient business with updated digital technology and a state-of-the-art service department that is climate-controlled. It will also feature a state-of-the-art car wash for classic customers. It will be a big service shop, almost as big as this one, Gabarda said. The new location will place under one roof five businesses: new vehicles, pre-owned vehicles, parts, service, and the business department. Gabarda said he could have purchased land on the east side of Loop 250 for a lower price, but he would have lost traffic from Odessa. He estimated about half of his clients come from Odessa. Gabarda is proud of both the fact he is a truly family-owned business and the dealership's support of numerous community initiatives, from schools to first responders to families in need. All dealerships continue to deal with post-COVID issues, including high interest rates, high supplies of vehicles, and low demand. As a result, he said, business costs are significantly higher. Gabarda predicts the industry will cycle out of these issues in about 3.5 years. But he said, in reality, a good dealer, a well-run dealership, will figure its way through anything. This area has lived through -$35 oil, the Arab embargo. A good dealer knows how to navigate their way. This article is entitled Clearing the Air. EPA rule to slash toxic pollution will affect 80 Texas plants. By Alejandra Martinez, The Texas Tribune. More than 200 chemical manufacturing plants nationwide, including dozens in Texas along the Gulf Coast, will be required to reduce toxic emissions that could cause cancer for people who live nearby, under a new Environmental Protection Agency rule announced Tuesday. These facilities use hazardous chemicals to make plastics, paints, synthetic fabrics, pesticides, and other petrochemical products. An EPA list shows that about 80, or 40% of them, are located in Texas, mostly in coastal cities like Baytown, Channelview, Corpus Christi, Deer Park, La Porte, Pasadena, and Port Arthur. The new rule focuses on limiting six chemicals: ethylene oxide, chloroprene, benzene, 1,3-butadiene, ethylene dichloride, and vinyl chloride. All are known to increase cancer risk and cause damage to the nervous, cardiovascular, and immune systems after long-term exposure. According to the EPA, the new rule will slash more than 6,000 tons of toxic air pollutants annually and reduce the number of people with elevated cancer risk by 96% nationwide. The new rule will also require facilities to install fence-line air monitoring devices that measure concentrations of a specific chemical at the property line of a manufacturing site. The fence-line monitors will help protect nearby communities by giving them more accurate information about the quality of the air they are breathing. Harold Wimmer, president and CEO of the American Lung Association, said in a statement. Studies show that communities of color are more likely to be exposed to pollution from chemical manufacturing plants. Cynthia Palmer, a senior analyst for petrochemicals with the environmental nonprofit Moms Clean Air Force, said in a written statement that the new rule is deeply personal for me. My best friend grew up near 9 of the chemical manufacturing facilities in Texas that will be covered in this new rulemaking. She died of cancer when her children were in preschool. Palmer said the new rule is an important step forward for environmental justice. Tuesday's announcement comes a month after the EPA approved a rule to slash ethylene oxide emissions from commercial sterilization facilities. In Laredo, residents say such plants have contributed to the city's elevated rates of cancer. The new rule goes into effect shortly after being published in the Federal Register. The biggest reductions in cancer risk will come from reducing emissions of ethylene oxide and chloroprene. Facilities must meet requirements for reducing ethylene oxide within 2 years after the rule becomes effective, and must meet requirements for chloroprene within 90 days after the effective date. The rule targets equipment at chemical manufacturing facilities that release air pollution, like heat exchange systems, devices that heat or cool liquids, and processes like venting and flaring that release gases into the air. Flaring often happens during startups, shutdowns, and malfunctions. In Texas, companies reported releasing 1 million pounds of excess pollution during a January cold snap. Environmental advocates have called those events loopholes in environmental enforcement that allow facilities to pollute without punishment or fines under certain conditions, like during extreme weather or chemical disasters. The rule requires facilities to do additional compliance reporting and performance evaluations after such events. It's essential that these protections are rigorously enforced and that leaders at all levels of government continue to work together to address health threats from petrochemical polluters so that all communities can thrive. Dion Deligatti, Associate Vice President for Community Engagement at Environmental Defense Fund, said in a press release. The Texas Tribune is a member-supported, nonpartisan newsroom informing and engaging Texans on state politics and policy. Learn more at texastribune.org. This article is entitled, Driver 26 Dies After Vehicle Rolls Over in Martin County, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. One fatality in Martin County was reported April 6th at approximately 10:55 p.m. after a single-vehicle accident occurred at County Road 2400 and County Road 3201. Preliminary information revealed a 2007 Jeep Patriot was traveling eastbound on County Road 2400, approaching the offset intersection of County Road 3201. According to the report, the Jeep veered off the roadway into the southeast barrow ditch of County Road 2400 and then struck a dirt mound, causing the vehicle to roll over. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, the driver of the Jeep was identified as 26-year-old Daniel Avila III of El Paso. Avila was pronounced dead at the scene. The crash remains under investigation, and no further information was available. This article is entitled, Four-Year-Old Dies After Medical Emergency in Ector County, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Ector County Independent School District reported the death of a four-year-old student after a medical emergency at school. According to school officials, a four-year-old boy at Lamar Early Education Center suffered a medical emergency Monday and was transported to the hospital, where he later died. "We are devastated," said ECISD Superintendent Dr. Scott Murray in a press release. "The loss of a child creates unimaginable pain. Our trauma team was at Lamar yesterday to support the staff, students, and families who need a counselor to talk with." Murray also wrote that the trauma team will remain at the school for as long as they are needed. "The entire ECISD team extends our deepest condolences to the student's family," Murray wrote. Ector County ISD serves more than 33,500 students across the 900 square miles of Odessa and surrounding communities in Ector County. For more information, contact ECISD Communications at 432-456-9019. This article is entitled MDC Funds Sought for Historic Midland Home by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. At Monday's meeting of the Midland Development Corporation Board of Directors, members heard a presentation from the Arts Council of Midland. The council has acquired the Scarborough Lineberry House Complex at 802 South Main, the second oldest house in Midland. Arts Council Executive Director Danny Holeva told board members his organization is requesting $400,000 from MDC to help fund renovations and updates at the 2.5-acre complex. The complex includes five buildings totaling 10,000 square feet. Holeva told board members work is being done on the smaller of the homes, the Lineberry House, also known as the Yellow House. Those renovations will result in office space as well as space for exhibitions, workshops, and classes. He said the $400,000 would also fund renovations in the Lineberry Guest House, the Scarborough Guest House, and exterior ADA bathroom. The renovations would represent a revenue-generating opportunity for the council, Holeva said, and provide another event space that benefits the city. It would also give local artisans and small businesses an opportunity to generate revenue. Investing in the arts creates jobs, attracts tourism, and contributes to overall economic vitality, he said. Melissa Hooper, a member of the council's board of trustees, agreed, telling board members, "Arts is a local dollar multiplier." This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, April 16th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Three at-large city candidates discuss local issues," by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Three of the five at-large city council candidates fielded questions on local issues and their backgrounds on Monday at the Midland Exchange Club luncheon at the Petroleum Club. The at-large city council vacancy was left after the passing of Dan Corrales in January. Early voting begins April 22nd, and Election Day is May 4th. Two candidates were not able to be in attendance on Monday, James R. Henry and Cheston Blank. Eric Davidson, John Burkholder, and Ben Roberts were in attendance. Davidson said he wants to see Midland continue to develop and invest in the future. He wants Midland to support business owners and attract businesses to the area. He said the oil and gas sector is the backbone of the city's economy and is vital to national security and the security of the United States allies abroad. "We do this by sticking to the strong, conservative Midland values that have gotten us here and made our economy strong. We also do it by forming public-private partnerships that want to improve the quality of life here in town for everybody," he said. He said some of the main issues the city is facing include roads and infrastructure, quality of life initiatives, and enhancement of public safety. Burkholder is the Planning and Zoning Commissioner. He graduated from Midland High School. "Midland is a business, and it should be run like a business," Burkholder said. "You talk about having business acumen. I've been running businesses since 2001. Been running successful business for 23 years. Burkholder said that his many years in West Texas has allowed him to see where Midland comes from, where it is now, and where it is going in the future. "Midland is a very complex city. We have our set of diverse problems that nobody else faces. And being here as long as I have, you get to see the ups and downs. You understand the challenges that we face," he said. Roberts' family moved to Midland in 1991. He also cited his long history in Midland and witnessing its development over the years. Roberts said he was going to run for council in November after disapproving of the building of the Hotel Santa Rita. When Corrales passed, Roberts decided to run in the special election. Roberts is a finance director at True Light Christian Fellowship. He said he believes in as little government intervention as possible in local businesses and citizens' lives. The candidate said he has a long history of volunteering in the area, like passing out food to the local homeless population with South Elementary School during the COVID-19 pandemic, and working in jail ministries at the Midland County Jail, and more. All three candidates stressed the importance for city residents to voice their opinions during the voting period. The trio were asked about the Santa Rita Hotel deal that was approved by the city in January. Burkholder said he supports the revitalization of downtown Midland and did not mind building a new hotel, but he said there should have been a more extensive negotiation process with the Midland Development Corporation. The negotiation process with the MDC was very lacking during this whole ordeal. There is three people who submitted an RFP, request for proposal, based on literally a conceptual drawing and basically how many rooms there is. Running a business, I don't make a decision based off a conceptual drawing. I make a business decision based off what it's going to bring to the city. When we talk about the analytics, then I compare all those analytics together at the end of the day, Burkholder said. Burkholder added, a second developer, who was a preferred builder for Marriott, brought a hotel project to the development corporation who did not want to use taxpayer funds to build a hotel. Burkholder said he talked with the MDC, and it said the project wasn't transformative enough. He said the city needs to be better stewards of taxpayer money, the MDC needs to make better deals, and there needs to be a thorough negotiation process with developers that want to build in the city of Midland. The MDC is critical to bring in business here into Midland, and we need to make sure that when they are doing that, though, we are getting the best deals we can possibly get, he said. Roberts said he does not care about revitalizing Midland, saying the city government should prioritize downtown improvements like streets and curbs. If businesses want to come into Midland and open up downtown, then that is their prerogative to do so, he said. Roberts added that he was completely against the Hotel Santa Rita project. The push to spend all this money to do a certain thing to downtown that no one really cares about seems like a waste of money, he said. If businesses found it beneficial to be there, downtown, then that's where they would be. But that's not where they want to be. Davidson said the Midland Development Corporation is a valuable entity that aims to improve the city by attracting business and supporting infrastructure projects. Davidson said he wants to support decisions made by previous council members and added that downtown Midland needed a hotel. He said there were more than one RFP submitted for a hotel project, and the MDC board and city council worked through them to find the RFP that made the most sense for Midland. He added that the Midland Development Corporation operates off sales tax, not property taxes, which allows the development corporation to improve the city without affecting citizens' taxes. With Ranchland Hills Golf Club set to be closed for the new Midland High School campus, the candidates were asked about keeping green space plentiful in the local area. Davidson said fostering public-private partnerships will help. The city needs to be willing to work with private citizens that offer funds for green space and park improvements. He discussed the zoo that is set to be built in Midland, the preserve, and green acres, where community members are donating funds for quality of life initiatives. Roberts said he wasn't sure what exactly the answer is to preserving green space in the area, but he said it's important for the city to inform its constituents on all their plans so that residents can voice their opinions on projects in the future. Burkholder said he supports building new schools, but said it's a tragedy that Ranchland Hills is being closed. Burkholder still holds out hope that Ranchland Hills can be saved, saying it drives about $1.5 million for local charities a year, and it provides a great golfing venue for teams and citizens. For those of you who don't know, all the wells that are being drilled over off of Big Spring right now, those horizontals are going underneath a city park, Hogan Park, and the golf course. So currently, as of right now, we're generating close to $12 million in royalty revenues that are to be used specifically for parks here in Midland, he said. He said green space is important for families with young children moving to the area. The three discussed the city's water situation. Burkholder said it was not a good idea to allow Pilot Water Solutions to build saltwater disposals near the T-Bar Ranch. You can tell me all day long that it's not going to migrate, and I can give you tons of studies and cases where I will show you it will migrate, he said. Burkholder said the city needs long-term water contracts in which aquifers are protected from any kind of oil and gas drilling. It would save Midland money by finding a water supply where the city can use its existing lines. Davidson said the city has water sources that it has not yet tied pipeline infrastructure into. We need to start planning now to create those pipelines to be able to bring that water into our city, he said. Davidson said the city can also lean on the oil and gas industry for cleaning up water. They are, the oil and gas industry, recycling 12 million barrels a day here in these counties. Now granted, that's not drinkable water, but there's millions being poured into beneficial reuse programs for water. We have some of the brightest people when it comes to water engineering, he said. Roberts said that securing water and water supplies for the future should always be a main priority for the city. This article is entitled, Two People Dead in Major Collision in North Midland, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Two individuals were reported dead after a major accident in North Midland on Monday around 4:15 p.m. Midland police stated that one person was transported to hospital and two others perished after a collision involving a dump truck occurred in the 7100 block of North State Highway 349 at the intersection of Craddock Highway and State Highway 349. According to police reports, the dump truck failed to yield the right-of-way to a Ford F-350 traveling southbound on State Highway 349. Two individuals in the Ford F-350 were reported as 32-year-old Richard Vela and 39-year-old Felipe Avila, both of Odessa. Both were reported as dead at the scene of the collision. A third person in the Ford F-350 was taken to Midland Memorial Hospital and treated for injuries. The driver of the dump truck, a 33-year-old Midland resident, was released without injury at the scene. The incident remains under investigation. This article is entitled, West Texas Police Hunt for Homicide Carjacking Suspect, by Scott Nunn, staff writer. Police in West Texas were involved in an intense manhunt for a homicide suspect Monday. The manhunt began after a deadly encounter on Monday morning in Ector County. An unidentified white male allegedly attacked a homeowner on the 5700 block of Greenway, subsequently shooting and killing him. The suspect fled in the victim's 2014 black Ford Mustang convertible, leaving police on a multi-community and multi-county chase. According to multiple reports, the suspect eventually crashed the Mustang and switched vehicles, reportedly commandeering a tan Chevrolet Tahoe. However, shortly before deadline, it was reported the suspect had wrecked the Tahoe and was on foot in the Mertzen area. Earlier in the day, Odessa city officials reported a related incident where a citizen flagged down officers on Highway 80 and Fodry after being shot at by a fleeing vehicle. At that time, authorities were already searching for the stolen Mustang. The incidents led to temporary lockdowns of schools in Odessa and Midland, as well as many others later in the day. A secure means all students and staff remains indoors, with no one entering or exiting until further notice, while activities inside continue as usual, explained one school district release. The precautionary lockdown was later lifted, confirming no direct threats to the schools. San Angelo Live was reporting multiple police aircraft had been activated in search of the suspect. Police in San Angelo issued a press release in the afternoon, assuring city residents that they were safe and that the department had strategically positioned officers and deputies on the roadways. As of deadline, it was unclear if the suspect had been apprehended. However, more information will be available in the coming days. This article is entitled, Child 4 Drowns in Apartment Complex Pool, by the City of Midland. At 6:42 p.m. Sunday, Midland police were called out to an apartment complex in the 6,000 block of Briarwood Avenue in Northwest Midland. A call to MPD stated that a 4-year-old boy had drowned in the complex pool. MPD reported the child was taken to Midland Memorial, but passed away. MPD also reported a Crimes Against Persons Unit detective was informed and promptly arrived at the scene to initiate the investigation, and that no evidence of foul play has been found at this time. Midland Police stated the investigation will continue until the autopsy report is available. This is the Life Tributes column. Betty Childs, April 13, 1936 to March 9, 2024. Odessa. Betty Adela Childs passed away March 9, 2024 in her home at the age of 87. Graveside services will be held on April 13th at 11 a.m. on what would have been her 88th birthday, at Sunset Memorial Gardens. She was born April 13, 1936, to Houston and Hazel Hale in Dumas, Texas. She found the true love of her life working at the Dumas local radio station, KDDD, with a local DJ, Frank Childs. They were married on October 10, 1961. Between them at the time, they had one son, Andy Wayne, and two daughters, Adela Kay and Susan Diane. After several years of bouncing from town to town, as one in the broadcasting business tends to do, they had another son in Lubbock named Gregory D., and finally, when they landed in Midland, their son Michael Christopher was born. Betty's passing has reunited her with her father and mother, but more importantly, her soulmate and husband, as well as many relatives and friends. Her children, in-laws, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchild look forward to eventually being reunited with her so that we can hug her again and hear her say, "I love you forever." Wallace Doyle Gilbert, August 3, 1940 to April 3, 2024. Wallace Doyle Gilbert, age 83, passed away peacefully on Wednesday, April 3rd, at home in Midland. He was born August 3rd, 1940, in Odessa, to Norman, N.O., and Malene Gilbert. He was a 1958 graduate of Wichita Falls Old High School in Wichita Falls. Doyle served in the United States Army from 1959 to 1963. He married the woman of his dreams, Nina, in 1981, and lived an amazing life with her. He is survived by his brother, Bobby Jean Gilbert, sister, Clynell Staten, granddaughter, Lori Hawkins Sims, and great-granddaughter, Livia Clemens. Please join the family to celebrate the life of Doyle at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, 3800 North Big Spring in Midland. Viewing will be Friday, April 12th from 6 to 8 p.m., and funeral services will be Saturday, April 13th at 2 p.m. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Sherilyn Lindberg, November 8, 1946 to April 8, 2024. Midland. Sherilyn Ann Lindberg passed away peacefully Monday morning, April 8th. She was born in Levelland, Texas on November 8, 1946 to Fred Odell Worthy and Grace Jewel Mulvihill Worthy. She moved to Midland during her childhood, where she resided until her death. She is survived by her son, Jimmy Martindale, wife, Tanya, daughter, Mary Martindale, husband, Jeff Bolton, sister, Betty Reynolds, grandchildren, Alyssa Martindale, Chance Whiteley, and Casey Martindale, great-grandchildren, Aidan Padgett, Riley Padgett, and Lennon Morby. She was preceded in death by her parents, sister Ruth Worthy, brother Fred Worthy Jr., daughter Diana Martindale, granddaughter Courtney Martindale, and grandson Cody Martindale. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, April 13th at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Services entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. The family respectfully requests, in lieu of flowers, please consider making donations to Hospice of Midland or Springboard Center of Midland.
Odessa High School senior Anika Gundlapalli, named National Merit Scholarship finalist, April 8, 2024, by staff report. Anika Gundlapalli, a senior at Odessa High School, was named a National Merit Scholarship finalist, meaning she ranks among the top half percent of over 1.3 million high school seniors. The valedictorian of her class, Anika, earned the honor based on her performance on the preliminary SAT, National Merit Scholarship Qualifying Test, PSAT-NMSQT, in the fall semester of her junior year. She's also an International Baccalaureate Diploma candidate and a Presidential Scholar nominee, according to Ector County ISD. Anika's productivity extends beyond the classroom. She is a member of the OHS Varsity Choir, president of the Junior Volunteer Leadership Program at Medical Center Hospital, a volunteer at the Crisis Center of West Texas, and founder and president of the Foundation for Mental Health Empowerment and Education. In response to her latest accomplishment, Anika expressed gratitude for the opportunity, says she loves learning, and crediting her teachers for supporting that passion. The daughter of Magana Gilala and Sai Gundlapalli, Anika wants to pursue a career in medicine and is undecided on a college. Listen to this story 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station, www.recordinglibrary.org, live stream. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud. Sharing data is benefiting emission reduction efforts, April 8, 2024, by staff report. Collaboration within the energy sector is helping reduce methane emissions, according to Vanessa Ryan, Chevron's manager of methane reduction. During a recent Bloomberg panel, Ryan said sharing data is proving beneficial to advancing lower carbon goals. She detailed how a 2021 Oil and Gas Climate Initiative, OGCI, satellite detection pilot program in Iraq led to all detected emissions being mitigated. That was very exciting and has given us the confidence for OGCI to expand this program, said Ryan, who is also the gas workstream lead for the OGCI. Why it matters. In December, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced a final rule and its expectation that the rules will reduce oil and gas-related methane emissions by approximately 58 million tons from 2024 to 2038. The Bloomberg panel discussed how organizations could be part of the solution through data sharing. The faster companies can share data, the faster they can act to mitigate any issues. Satellite benefits, helpful in identifying super emitters, potential to be lowest cost option by site, can cover broad areas in a short amount of time. The bigger picture, in regions like the Permian Basin, Chevron sees an opportunity to show leadership, Ryan said. I've seen some really exciting things in the space, she said. Chevron is working to make it easier to join forces on methane detection, whether by airplanes or sensors. It is doing so in part through participation in the Environmental Partnership, an organization focused on improving the industry's environmental performance, joint flyovers in the region to introduce this technology to smaller operators, and workshops for companies to exchange information, participation in Project Astra, which is focused on near-continuous sensor monitoring. It's very early days, but there are a number of things going on in the Permian that make me optimistic. We're going to make big strides in methane performance, Ryan said. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station, www.recordinglibrary.org/livestream. Off-duty firefighter rescues baby after stroller rolls into Lake Carlsbad, April 12, 2024, by Mike Aldax. An off-duty Carlsbad firefighter rescued a baby whose stroller had rolled into Lake Carlsbad. The heroic incident occurred Thursday, April 11. A grandmother was walking her dogs and pushing her 10-month-old grandson in a stroller at Carlsbad Beach Park, according to city officials. She took her hands off the stroller to care for the dogs, not realizing the brake on the stroller wasn't set. Within a few short seconds, the stroller and the baby had rolled into the lake waters. Fortunately, Mark Johnson, a lieutenant paramedic with the Carlsbad Fire Department, was with his wife at the park walking their dog. He heard the splash of water and also his wife saying, "Go," then saw the upside-down stroller in the water. He jumped in and was able to get the stroller and baby back onto dry land. He medically examined the baby boy, who was wet and upset but not injured. The Carlsbad Fire Department and City of Carlsbad thanked Mark for his quick and decisive actions, which resulted in a life saved. Fire officials said, on or off duty, Lieutenant Mark Johnson is a great example of the service and selflessness that is the foundation of the fire service. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org/livestream. ECISD's Technology Chief wins National CTO of the Year Award, April 11, 2024, by Staff Report. Dr. Kelly Wilkes of Ector County ISD was named the 2024 Withrow National Chief Technology Officer CTO of the Year by COSN, a premier association of K-12 education technology leaders. The award-honoring school tech pioneer Frank Withrow recognizes the latest leaders in technology who have been transformative for their school system. "It's nice to be recognized," said Dr. Wilkes. "I humbly accept this award on behalf of the whole technology division. Everyone I have worked with has contributed to my success and to the things I have been able to do." Dr. Wilkes has long supported ECISD, having been involved in the Raising Blended Learners Grant and the Math Innovation Zones Grant, as well as initiatives to bring the digital divide, according to ECISD. She is a collaborative leader who has developed partnerships in the community that encourage shared best practices and provide opportunities for all students, the school district said. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org/livestream. Much Ado About Nothing, coming to the Globe Theater, April 10, 2024, by Staff Report. Much Ado About Nothing is coming to the Globe Theater at Odessa College. The Odessa College Theater Department will present 5 performances based on Shakespeare's most beloved comedy. Dates are April 27th and May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th at 7 p.m. and April 28th at 6 p.m. The Globe Theater community of artists bring to life a rich array of characters through music, dance, and masterful command of Shakespeare's language. Much Ado About Nothing promises to be a celebration of love and life, keeping you smiling through the summer. Seating is limited. General admission tickets are $20 and can be purchased at lovelyglobe.brownpapertickets.com. All students, faculty, and staff are admitted free with an Odessa College ID. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org/livestream. West Texas Desert Hawks prep for start of 2024 season, April 8, 2024, by Staff Report. The West Texas Desert Hawks recently shared video footage from their first week of training camp of the 2024 season as the team gears up for its home and season opener on April 28. The Desert Hawks will host the Georgia Force at Ector Coliseum at noon on Sunday, April 28, in the first of 10 games in their 2024 Arena Football League season. Six of those games will be played at Ector Coliseum. Home games are against the Orlando Predators on May 16th, the Billings Outlaws on June 1st, the Albany Firebirds on June 8th, the Force again on June 16th, and the Louisiana Voodoo on June 29th. The team has also been active in the community, recently hosting Tumbleweeds Kid Club Night with the Big Brothers of the Permian Basin at Texas Roadhouse. It is hosting a benefit this week for the Texas Youth Foundation at Kendra Scott Midland. To purchase tickets and stay up to date on the Desert Hawks, visit the team on its website as well as on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Also, check out this recent report from the Arena Football League about Desert Hawks, Lonnie Outlaw, an AFL champion and veteran. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org livestream. The Flavors of Juarez Delight Foodies, April 9, 2024, by Kathy Chateau. Blanca Rivas was missing her hometown in 2024 when she first set up her food truck, Gorditas Estilo Juarez, bringing the flavors of home to Odessa. The city recently featured her delicious work. For her gorditas, Rivas starts with the basics, a thick tortilla made with corn and flour, and then some customers can choose a flavorful stew for the inside. People can select chicharrón, roast, meat and red chili, barbecue, picadillo, and arrero, or breakfast options like egg with ham, potatoes, chorizo, and more. From their new home at 10517 West University Boulevard in Odessa, Rivas and her brother quickly started serving up their gorditas to Odessa's West Side residents, as well as local companies. The food truck starts serving its customers at 6 a.m. and continues until 2 p.m. Rivas told the city of Odessa that she holds deep appreciation for every step of her journey, expressing gratitude for each client as a blessing. Find the gorditas Estilo Juarez food truck at 10517 West University Boulevard in Odessa. Questions? Contact the truck at 432-307-4078. Find this story in audio for blind and low vision adults at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station, www.recordinglibrary.org livestream.
This is the Dear Abby column. Generous gift isn't enough for mom who asks for more. Dear Abby, I'm a professional, well-educated adult who moved back home because of concerns about my father's health, as well as having landed a much better job. As an extra perk, I've been able to save money to pay toward my student loans, as well as spoil my parents a bit as they grow older. I recently gifted my parents, for the second time, their dream vacation. They loved it the first time and never imagined they'd be able to do it twice. Because my parents still have a minor child who cannot remain alone, I am choosing, as I did last time, to use my personal vacation time to babysit. My mother has been planning the details of her upcoming trip and has now asked me to take more time off work so they can have a road trip after their vacation. Abby, I am already draining every bit of my time off for their week-long vacation and will not be able to have a vacation myself until later in the year when I accrue more time. I know she's requesting this to make the trip more fun for my father. Although I am a generous and patient person, this has left me feeling almost speechless, a bit unappreciated, and frustrated. Am I overreacting? Should I find a way to extend their trip? Signed, Limited in Ohio. Dear Limited, the answer to both of your questions is no. Your mother apparently doesn't appreciate how generous you have been in providing these vacations for her and your father. If she wants to extend their holiday, she should make her own arrangements for your sibling to be supervised if she and your dad won't be available to do it themselves. Shame on her for trying to foist that responsibility onto you. Dear Abby,
I lost my darling wife recently. Her death was a shock to everyone. She was placed on life support for a short period while the medical staff performed tests to determine the extent of her injuries. When it became apparent that she would spend the rest of her life in a vegetative state, no decisions had to be made by her family or by me. My wife had an advance directive in place stating she did not want to remain living in this condition. I was extremely fortunate in that no one in her family wanted to contest the document. As hard as it was for me to discontinue life support, I knew it was what she wanted. She passed peacefully, quietly, and quickly. Abby, please encourage your readers to make the time and make the effort to have an advance directive drawn up, whatever their desires may be. It was my wife's last gift to me, and I will be forever grateful for it. Signed, Remembering Her in Arizona. Dear Remembering Her, please accept my sympathy for the loss of your wife. I appreciate you taking the time to share this important information with my readers and me. Your letter serves as a reminder that all end-of-life documents should be reviewed regularly to be sure that they reflect one's current thinking. You can contact Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.